Harper Audio presents Super Freakonomics: Global Cooling, Patriotic Prostitutes, and Why Suicide Bombers Should Buy Life Insurance by Stephen D. Levitt and Stephen J. Dubner. Read by Stephen J. Dubner. Copyright 2009 by Stephen D. Levitt and Stephen J. Dubner. Production copyright 2009 by HarperCollins Publishers. An explanatory note. The time has come to admit that in our first book we lied. Twice. The first lie appeared in the introduction, where we wrote that the book had no, quote, unifying theme. Here's what happened. Our publishing house, nice people, smart people, they read the first draft of our book and cried out in alarm, "This book has no unifying theme." Instead, the manuscript was a random heap of stories about cheating teachers, self-dealing realtors, and crack-selling mama's boys. There was no nifty theoretical foundation upon which these stories could be piled to miraculously add up to more than the sum of their parts. Our publisher's alarm only grew when we proposed a title for this mishmash of a book, Freakonomics. Even over the phone, you could hear the sounds of their palms smacking foreheads. This pair of bozos just delivered a manuscript with no unifying theme and a nonsensical, made-up title. It was duly suggested that in the published book, we concede, right up front, in the introduction, that we had no unifying theme. And so, in the interest of keeping the peace and our book advance, that's what we did. But in truth, the book did have a unifying theme, even if it wasn't obvious at the time, even to us. If pressed, you could boil it down to four words. People respond to incentives. If you wanted to get more expansive, you might say this. People respond to incentives, although not necessarily in ways that are predictable or manifest. Therefore, one of the most powerful laws in the universe is the law of unintended consequences. This applies to school teachers and realtors and crack dealers, as well as expectant mothers, sumo wrestlers, bagel salesmen, and the Ku Klux Klan. The issue of the book's title, meanwhile, still lay unresolved. After several months and dozens of suggestions, including unconventional wisdom, ain't necessarily so, bleh, and E-ray vision, don't ask, our publisher finally decided that perhaps Freakonomics wasn't so bad after all, or, more precisely, it was so bad it might actually be good. Or, maybe, they were simply exhausted. The subtitle promised that the book would explore the hidden side of everything. This was our second lie. We were sure reasonable people would view such a phrase as intentional hyperbole, but some readers took it literally, complaining that our stories, as motley a collection as they were, did not in fact address, quote, everything. And so, while the subtitle was not intended as a lie, it turned out to be one. We apologize. Our failure to include everything in the first book, however, had an unintended consequence of its own. It created the need for a second book. But let it be known straight away that this second book and the first book combined still do not literally comprise everything. The two of us have now been collaborators for several years. It began when one of us, Dubner, an author and journalist, wrote a magazine article about the other, Levitt, an academic economist. Adversaries in the beginning, albeit civil ones, we joined forces only when several publishers began to offer significant sums of money for a book. Remember, people respond to incentives, and despite the common perception, economists and journalists are people too. We discussed how the money should be divided. Almost immediately, we came to an impasse, for each of us insisted on a 60-40 split. Upon realizing that we each thought the other guy should get 60%, we knew we'd have a good partnership. So, we settled on 50-50 and got to work. We didn't feel much pressure writing that first book because we genuinely thought few people would read it. Levitt's father agreed and said it was immoral to accept even a penny up front. These low expectations liberated us to write about any and everything we found worthwhile, so we had a pretty good time. We were surprised and thrilled when the book became a hit. as profitable as it might have been to pump out a quick follow-up, think Freakonomics for Dummies or Chicken Soup for the Freakonomic Soul, we wanted to wait until we had done enough research that we couldn't help but write it all down. So here we finally are, more than 4 years later, with a second book that we believe is easily better than the first. Of course, it's up to you, not us, to say if that is true, or perhaps if it's as bad as some people feared our first book might be. If nothing else, our publishers have finally resigned themselves to our unyielding bad taste. When we proposed that this new book be called Super Freakonomics, they didn't even blink.